The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
And good morning. It is time to get up with the NFL and every team facing a decision it has never considered before. Will it undo a Super Bowl favorite? We'll explain in 3 minutes. Then, the announcement yesterday was chilling. No fall championships in college. What does that mean for football and everybody else? And then, Dak says all the right things. But that doesn't change the question. Is this destined to be his last year in Big D? We've got a lot of questions, and we'll get you all the answers as we get up with you starting right now on a Friday from Bristol. I'm Mike Greenberg. This is Get Up on ESPN. Be with you for the next 2 hours, and then First Take will come your way. KBO will move over to ESPN2, and delighted to have you with us. We will get to all of that football news in just a moment, but let's start with the game of the night, performance of the night, and everything all wrapped up into one. Damian Lillard, who has been the MVP of the restart. His Blazers taking on the Nets. Win and Portland is in, but they're down 7 in the fourth. But look at the range. Damian Lillard pulling up from 35 feet. He was 8 of 14 from three-point range. This is a few possessions later. Another step back. Another three. Single-handedly trying to shoot his team into the playoffs. Now they're down 1. Still down 1. Under 3 to go. Lillard dishing. Nurkic. Yes. He would score 22. Blazers take a 1-point lead. This is the next possession now for Brooklyn. Caris LeVert. Boy, has he been good. The spin, the nice touch. 16 of 29 from the floor for LeVert. Nets up 1. Next Blazers possession. Lillard. Gary Trent Jr. falling away. 16 off the bench for him. Blazers up a deuce. Under a minute 15 to go now. Lillard, look at the defense. Look at the hustle from Damian Lillard trying to play his team into the postseason. Coming up from behind LeVert, the dive and the steal. And the Blazers have the ball, so they have a chance to extend the lead. And there's his backcourt mate, C.J. McCollum, finding space. Yes, 25 for McCollum. Blazers up 4. But if that's a question, LeVert once again has the answer. Plus the foul. He'd make the free throw. 37 for Caris LeVert. Nets are within 1 after a Blazer miss. One last chance for the Nets. LeVert for the win. And it's no good. And the Blazers hang on. They make it to the play-in game. Portland behind 42 points and 12 assists from Damian Lillard. Live to play another day.
You know, it's almost like every game that we've been playing our last 3-4 games has been like our season is on the line. So once you get to the playoffs, obviously the urgency and the care is going to be there.
He's a special player and he's a special person. And, you know, the special guy, the special NBA players in history have had that something, and he has it. You know, he has a will that transcends. We wouldn't be the team, obviously, without not only his basketball skill, but his mental makeup.
Been unbelievable, and according to Elias, he's the first player ever to end the regular season with 3 straight 40-point games. His 154 points in that stretch, by far the most of any player in his last 3 games of a season. And again, they prove then not to be his last 3 games. They'll play Memphis in the play-in game tomorrow. Meanwhile, to the NFL, and the Seattle Seahawks yesterday waived rookie cornerback Kama Sivaram after he was caught on video trying to sneak a woman into the team's hotel. The NFL Network first reported the circumstances of his release, noting that the woman was wearing Seahawks gear in an attempt to disguise herself as a player. This is a fascinating story. Dominique Foxworth, who is trying his best to make me laugh, and I will not fall for that.
Sorry.
Rob Ninkovich, Kimberly Martin are all here. Oh, look, we talked about this early this morning. Neek, I'm trying to make up my mind. If this is a very serious story, we should treat very seriously because of the potential ramifications, or if we should acknowledge that it is also, at least in some part, hilarious.
I mean, both, I guess. I'm going to leave it to somebody else to talk about the serious nature. There's so many serious things that we can talk about. Understand how he is risking his team's health and putting potentially the season in jeopardy. That's a real thing, I guess. But also, isn't he kind of the best cornerback ever? Like, doesn't he have all the traits of a cornerback? Like, he's willing to take risks. He won't be denied. He's creative. He's finding ways to make it work. Nobody wants it more than him. That's what we talk about in football. You gotta want it more. Who wants it more than a guy who's willing to talk some lovely young lady into dressing up like a Seahawk in order to get into his room? Man. Camp is stressful.
And now he's out of a job. Okay.
Okay. So that is the angle I was expecting you to take. Let me turn to Ninkovic and see if he has a more professional attitude towards this circumstance. I mean, is this – if you're one of the other guys in that team, Rob, I mean, we are dealing with, like, trust here, right? Like, this is – we can't joke around too much about something that is actually serious that could derail – a season, could derail a team, could have all of these ramifications. I'm not denying the funny part of this, Rob, but how about the serious part of it?
Well, I mean, look, at this particular moment, it's different. Nobody's really gone through the things that we're going through right now. So I can't fault a 21-year-old kid, you know, trying to, you know, figure things out in this particular moment that they're not used to doing, and it's never, you know, been this serious before. So, you know, as a football player and literally as a country right now, there's two sides to this virus, and it's unfortunate that, you know, we're dealing with the things that we're dealing with right now. But in this particular moment, it is serious because there's guys that are opting out to not play football, the game that they love, because of the fact that this virus could be so detrimental to not only themselves, but their families. So, yeah, it's a pretty serious issue, the things that we're dealing with right now on the serious side of things.
Kimberly, what should we be taking away from this situation? As we look at it from every possible angle, what should we be thinking about as we see this story yesterday in Seattle, and what does it mean for the league?
I mean, here's the problem. There are no foolproof plans when you're dealing with human beings. And in fact, I had almost like a prophetic conversation with a GM a couple weeks ago when I asked him about why he decided not to do the bubble scenario with his team. And he said, because there are no guarantees. He even told me that some guy is going to try to sneak out of the team hotel to see his lady or ladies. And look what we have, the opposite, a player actually trying to sneak a girl into their team hotel. These things, I was shocked by it, but a lot of NFL personnel probably weren't, because they probably predicted stuff like this was going to happen.
And I'd like to, we will come back and cover this story from a different angle, as far as this is a player who was extremely unlikely to make the team anyway. How would this be handled? How will it be handled if this circumstance were to present itself with a higher profile player, or someone who is more integral to the team? Nate, give me a quick thought on that, and we'll come back to it a little bit later. But if this is an important player, because they waived this guy immediately, he was going to get cut eventually anyway. How would this be handled with a more important player?
You know the answer to that question before you asked it, Greeny. Like, if the player had value, a lot of value, they would absolutely find a way to get him on the team, find a way to forgive him. And I'm not even sure if we would hear this story. They might find that video. They'll find that player, bring him to an office, maybe have a conversation with him, and tell him to show up the next morning ready to practice. Like, that's what it boils down to. These guys are not that principled. They have some principles, obviously, but the principles stop when it comes to impact and how well their season's going to go, which impacts their career and their money.
And Ninkovic, I can think of no better way to leave this conversation for the moment than this. People wonder, is this the kind of thing that happens in training camp regularly? Is this a story that's anything like anything you've ever heard of?
Well, I mean, I can think back to a guy that I knew. His name was Bob Minkovic, and his rookie season in 2006, he might have brought someone up in particular to his hotel, and they've been married for 14 years with three children. So, look, you can't deny love. That's just the way it is. It's fate. It's love. Follow your heart.
That's extremely
well
said.
Let your heart guide you, Bob. Let your heart guide you.
All right, let's hold this thought there for a moment. I do want to come back to this story because there's a few other ways to treat it. But let's get to some really genuinely serious business. Yesterday, NCAA President Mark Emmert made it clear that his organization, the NCAA, has no authority to tell the SEC, the ACC, or the Big 12 whether or not they can play football this fall. Here is what Emmert had to say regarding fall sports in general.
We cannot now, at this point, have fall NCAA championships because there's not enough schools participating. The board also established, Board of Governors also said, look, if you don't have half of the schools playing a sport, you can't have a legitimate championship. So We can't in any Division I NCAA championship sport now, which is everything other than FBS football that goes on in the fall.
It's an incredibly important distinction that I'm not sure everyone fully understands. He basically said there will be no championships decided in the NCAA this fall. It doesn't apply to football. Meanwhile, this quote yesterday from an infectious disease advisor to the NCAA named Carlos Del Rio. He said, I feel like the Titanic. We have hit the iceberg and we're trying to make decisions of what time we should have the band play. We need to focus on what's important. What's important right now is we need to control this virus. Not having fall sports this year and controlling this virus would be, to me, the number one priority. So there's a lot to unpack there. And here to do it are Paul Feinbaum and Heather Dinich, our insider. And we will start with you. Heather, first, I don't know that everyone understands, before we get to those quotes, I don't know that everyone understands the distinction that Emmert is making there. But the NCAA, for lack of a better way of putting it, has no control or say over what the football programs decide to do, right? So what he said yesterday doesn't in any way affect the SEC, the Big 12, or the ACC.
Not immediately, Greeny, but I asked Big 12 Commissioner Bob Bowlesby what, if any, impact it would have on FBS football, and he said that's still under consideration. Because what people have to remember is that while we're essentially talking about FCS football, volleyball, men's and women's soccer, and cross track, cross country, if those sports decide not to play, then that is an optics issue for football. Right now, the NCAA is telling those other sports, you cannot compete for a national title right now. They have to decide whether or not they can compete for a national title in the spring. Shane Lyons at West Virginia is the chair of the Football Oversight Committee. He said there are some FCS football programs that are still trying to play some non-conference football games. His team is trying to play one of them. So all of those things, there's still a lot of questions. But again, Mark Emmert, in the same breath that he said they should try to play these championships in the spring, also said, don't forget about this past spring's athletes that got their championships taken away from them. So you're getting a log jam now, a couple of months from now, and all of these people trying to squeeze everything in.
Absolutely. It's hard to sort of keep everything straight. But Paul, as you hear, the president of the NCAA say there will be no other championships competed for in the fall, and you hear this infectious disease advisor saying, I feel like the Titanic, and we're trying to figure out what time the band needs to play. What impact do things like that have, in your mind, on the decisions regarding football that will ultimately be made?
Greeny, I think the combination of those two will be significant. It may not be today or tomorrow, but I mean, I'm sitting here listening to that again and shaking my head in somewhat amazement, even though we all know, and we've been talking about this ad nauseum, that Mark Emmert does not have the power. But the idea and the optics, most importantly, of the head of the NCAA essentially saying, you know, you really shouldn't go on and we can't go on because we don't have enough teams competing. And meanwhile, you swivel the camera around and there is the Big 12, the SEC and the ACC marching along like they're not even hearing the rest of the country talk. I mean, it is a singularly stunning moment in the history of college sports, what we're watching here, and it's a long way from being over. I say that not really. I mean, we may be days or weeks away from this being resolved, but it is simply shocking how dysfunctional this sport is.
Well, there certainly isn't at least any unanimity of thought, which I suppose makes it a microcosm of everybody else when it comes to all this. Guys, stay close by because we have more to deal with on this. I also want to point out that, for the record, I do have a poll question up on my Twitter page today, which I think is an interesting one. And I've been fascinated by the results so far, by the way. At ESPN Greeny on Twitter, if they are able to play for a championship this year, who you got? Bama, Clemson, Oklahoma, or other? Cast your vote on my Twitter page at ESPN Greeny. Rep your program, and we'll see what comes back to us. Meanwhile, as we continue, more from college football, where a story program's players are not happy with how they're being tested and how they're being handled. And you will hear exactly why coming up. And then, when Dak Prescott spoke this week, he said all the right things. But is the current Cowboys quarterback long for Dallas? You'll find out why the answer may be no. As we continue, you're watching Get Up on ESPN. Back on Get Up, and let's run the floor through some of the other action in the NBA's bubble last night. The Grizzlies clinched a berth in the play-in game. They'll play Portland after beating the Bucks by 13 thanks to triple-double performances from both rookie sensation Ja Morant and from Jonas Valanciunas. So again, it will be the Grizzlies and the Trailblazers in the play-in game in the West. Meanwhile, the Suns fell just short. Their magical undefeated run in the bubble continued. They beat the Mavericks last night, but with the Blazers winning, the Suns didn't get into that play-in game. They won eight straight games to end the season. That's the longest streak in NBA history by a team that missed the playoffs. Maybe something for them to build on going forward. And speaking of streaks, San Antonio's record-tying run of 22 consecutive postseason appearances is over. The Spurs were eliminated for a West Conference play-in game spot. Greg Popovich, however, has not lost his sense of humor. Here were his thoughts on that streak coming to an end.
Here's the deal. Streakies, not streak, streaky. Who told Osborne that the streak ended?
I think he read it in the newspaper.
News. It's total fake news. Lots of guys have been telling me the streak hasn't ended. Oh, yeah, I talk to people all the time. They call me. They tell me, fuck, the streak didn't end. It didn't end. I don't know where you guys are getting this.
Today on ESPN, the NBA regular season wraps up with a triple header starting 4 Eastern. Heat Pacers getting ready for their first-round playoff matchup, then the Clippers and the Thunder, and finally Sixers Rockets. All the action coming your way today on ESPN and on the ESPN app. Back to the college, where Syracuse football sat out practice yesterday after concerns about playing during the coronavirus pandemic. This is the third time the team has done this in little more than a week. The team is testing players every other week, but will test twice weekly during the season. Now, I'll admit, as we bring Heather Dinich back into our conversation here, and we've got Paul and Rob with us as well. Heather, when I first read this story yesterday, it didn't seem to me that it could possibly be true. Testing players every other week at a time when we're talking about these incredibly rigorous protocols and making sure everyone is safe at all times. How uniform are the testing protocols right now if one program is testing their players every other week?
Well, the conference is one thing that they have been trying to work on is uniform testing policies. But that is extremely difficult to do because of what we're seeing throughout the country in terms of testing availability and turnaround time. Greeny, it's literally varying campus by campus. And at Syracuse, it's a unique situation because it's a private school, so they don't have to release publicly their testing numbers. And athletic director John Wildhack has said that because of the players asked to, they are going to test them twice during the season. But when you go all the way out to the West Coast, you're talking about an entirely different situation, which is a big reason they're not playing football in the fall. It's because the testing at each campus varies so drastically in terms of the accessibility of it and the turnaround time. I woke up to a tweet this morning from the West Coast from Stanford saying that they are going to online courses and they're not welcoming undergraduates onto campus. That's the reason these university presidents are making these decisions about football. It's because they're making those decisions about their campuses, and so much of it is based on these testing.
So, Paul, are we getting the sense, and there's a similar story involving Florida State. It's not similar, but it's along the same vine. I'm not going to get to it now because I'm going to run out of time. But, Paul, I mean, if these players don't have total faith and confidence in the direction they're getting from the adults who are in charge here, then what? Then where are we?
Well, we're nowhere, Greeny, and we're not going to have football if that continues. I mean, the idea that players at Florida State and at Syracuse are calling out the people who are in charge. I mean, the athletic director at Syracuse, the president, the head football coach, these are the people that parents entrust for their players, their kids' safety, and the young players are saying, that's not enough. I mean, that's how ridiculous this situation is right now, and that's why I think the ACC is where you need to focus a lot of attention on. This is two schools right now, and there was a problem at Pittsburgh as well, Greeny, that they can't even get it right. How are we going to have a season if they're testing every other week? I mean, that is one of the most incredibly stupid things I've ever heard. And I hope more players will speak out because it's important to know what's really going on because the adults are not telling the truth.
Rob Ninkovich, you have said that you would play through a circumstance like this, but I would assume you would have to have total faith and confidence that you were being cared for as best as was as conceivably possible. What do you think of this?
Yeah, look, it's tough to try and figure out what college athletes are thinking right now. Their hopes and dreams are to try and play a season to where they can be looked at and go on to the NFL. So, you know, for you to tell an 18, 19, 20-year-old person that, hey, they're not going to have a football season, I think it's upsetting to them. And they want to play, but at the end of the day, these universities have to not look at their bottom line, because we all know that football here is the biggest money maker for all these universities that help float the rest of their athletic programs. So they're trying to put that bottom line in front of the health and safety of the players. I think that is the worst case that they can do. And look, you have to listen to the doctors and the medical people out there. They know the most about this. And right now it doesn't look good.
Look, if they're going to try and play, which I'm not here to tell them that they should not, then they must move heaven and earth in every conceivable way to make sure that they are putting the safety and health of these players first and foremost. Otherwise, not only is it impossible to play, but it is completely inappropriate. So I'm flabbergasted at some of this, and we'll continue to cover it for you. Meanwhile, as we go, medical experts at the NCAA very skeptical about playing. Jay Billis has an entirely different concern here. He was texting me yesterday. He will share those as he joins the conversation next. We're just getting warmed up. You're watching Get Up on ESPN. We are back on Get Up. Let's get up and go through some sports headlines from yesterday. The St. Louis Cardinals still haven't played since July 29th due to multiple positive coronavirus tests. They were supposed to resume their season tonight in Chicago against the White Sox. That has been pushed back a day. They will play a doubleheader tomorrow afternoon and then spend a bunch of time in Chicago trying to get their season restarted. Meanwhile, Serena and Venus Williams faced off yesterday, and it was Serena beating her older sister 3-6, 6-3, 6-4 in a hard-hitting back-and-forth second-round matchup at the top seed Open in Lexington. It was the 31st meeting of their careers, 22 and a half years after their first. And then Lakers star LeBron James' voting rights group has partnered with the Dodgers to make Dodger Stadium a polling place for the November general election, marking the first time a Major League Baseball team has offered its facility as a voting center. Those are just some of the headlines around the world of sports as we approach the bottom of the hour, just about 9:30 in the East. I'm Mike Greenberg in Bristol, Connecticut. This is Get Up with you for the next 90 minutes. Came on this morning about a half hour ago. Very busy day. Be with you till 11 Eastern time, and then a full 2 hour first take will come your way. And of course, the continuing huge story of the week involving college sports, college football, and beyond. Yesterday, the NCAA's chief medical officer and its two primary infectious disease advisors said the nation's focus should be on controlling the pandemic instead of playing fall sports, with one advisor saying, "We simply are not there now." There was this quote from Carlos Del Rio, who is an infectious disease advisor to the NCAA. He said, "I feel like the Titanic. We have hit the iceberg, and we're trying to make decisions of what time we should have the band play. We need to focus on what's important right now, is we need to control this virus. Not having fall sports this year and controlling this virus would be, to me, the number one priority." As I bring Heather and Paul back, and Jay Billis joins us here, I'll explain. It was Heather who read that quote to us yesterday on the air. And about a minute later, I got a text from my friend Jay Billis, who was put off by it, if I at the risk of sort of putting words in your mouth. Jay, so I'd like to start with you. We just read that again there. It's a quote from yesterday. What was it that sort of got under your skin there?
Dell Tech Fest starts now. To thank you for 40 unforgettable years, Dell Technologies is celebrating with anniversary savings on their most popular tech. For a limited time only, save on select next-gen PCs like the XPS 13 Plus, where you can make the everyday easier with Windows 11. Unleash more possibilities with cutting-edge systems, their most advanced features, and great prices. Plus, curate your dream setup with deals on select monitors, mice, and more must-have electronics and accessories. When you shop online at Dell.com/deals, you'll have access to state-of-the-art technology to match your forward-thinking spirit and free shipping on everything. Anniversary savings await you for a limited time only at Dell.com/deals. That's Dell.com/deals. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Delicious, meet nutritious. In the snack that packs a real protein punch, Wonderful Pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Wonderful Pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you're on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful Pistachios a complete protein, providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snacking game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more. Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use the code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only, not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use the code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Well, it wasn't the judgment or the quote by Dr. Del Rio. It was the fact that the NCAA and all the member conferences, all of them have these panel of medical experts. And on member institutions' campuses, there are the best infectious disease experts and epidemiologists, virologists, you name it, in the world. And they're giving advice to the conferences, and they're giving advice to the NCAA office in Indianapolis and Mark Emmert and his Board of Governors. What are they saying? You know, we need to know that. That is a public trust. All these institutions in the NCAA beat us over the head all the time with the education stick, that we're about education. Well, they need to educate the public on this pandemic, and they need to educate the public on their findings and what they are, the judgments they're making, the medical judgments, and what they're telling the respective conferences and what they're telling the NCAA. And Mark Emmert has said repeatedly that the NCAA doesn't have authority over football and authority over the decisions of the conferences as to whether to play. They just have authority over the championships. That doesn't mean that they don't have influence. And if the NCAA is being told by their infectious disease experts that it is irresponsible to play during this pandemic, they need to tell us that. And not just us, but they need to tell the players that. And the players, the staff, coaches, they need to know these things too. And there may be reasonable disagreement among medical professionals based upon geography or how the pandemic is affecting certain areas of the country. Myocarditis, there are some that may think that it can be managed, as others that think it's irresponsible to play with this as an issue for elite athletes. But we have to have that discussion, and that has been a profound failure of leadership on behalf of the conferences and on behalf of the office in Indianapolis, the NCAA office.
Heather, help us there, because this is something I've been trying to figure out all week and far longer than that. Is it feels as though there is a lack of willingness to share whatever medical information it is they're using to make their decisions. The Pac-12 comes out and says what they say. The Big Ten comes out and does what they do. And they, well, we're consulting our medical advisors. But that's not private information. There are no secrets there. There are no HIPAA violations if they say this is what our medical advisors are telling us. Why is it we, as the public and the media, don't know that?
Well, there could certainly be more transparency, but I would say that those doctors are certainly sharing everything that they have, obviously, with the presidents and the athletic directors. I do want to share with you, I spoke with a Power 5 athletic director yesterday who is in one of those conferences who is continuing to push forward. And this is what he told me. He said, doctors don't agree. They don't. The mainstream of public opinion thinks there's only one answer, but there's multiple answers to the same question. What we're doing may be exactly wrong. It may be right. He said, but we feel that we're comfortable moving along with the information that we have right now. I spoke with one of the doctors who is advising the Big 12, Dr. Chris Hostler, yesterday, and he told me, I said, why is it safe for the Big 12 to play, but nobody else? And he said that this is such a location variance issue. It is not a one single pandemic. It is impacting different regions differently. And so their doctors have different information. So that's basically what I've been told, is that people are getting this information and interpreting it differently. And it also is varying from place to place.
Boy, I hated that quote. We may be getting this entirely wrong. You're talking about the health and potentially, in some cases, maybe the lives of 18 to 22-year-old people. Paul, are we okay with that?
I'm not okay with that. I think it's a sham to hear comments like that, Greeny. And by the way, in reference to the NCAA, I don't really agree with him any more than Jay does, but I don't think there's much to interpret from Del Rio's comments. He clearly said it's not safe to play. Otherwise, he would not have used the Titanic reference. I mean, that is crystal clear. I think these conferences are not being transparent. The three remaining have not shared very much. It's interesting, Greeny, that the conferences may provide an ID doctor to the three of us or the four of us. But I would like to see all of them show up and have a transparent news conference and look us all in the eye and say, it's okay to play football. All I've heard from commissioners, and I've spoken to every one of them, Mike, is it's okay to proceed. It's safer on campus. The question isn't whether the college football players are safer on campus. Of course they are. They have medical training, the best in the world, allegedly. But what about playing football? That's what this is about. This is not about training. This is about having a 10-game season or an 11-game season in the ACC. And I've yet to hear one commissioner tell anyone that it's safe to play college football this fall.
Yeah, and if they don't wind up getting to a place where they play, that's fine too. But I think, Jay, what we need to hear from someone in a position of authority is we are completely confident that what we are doing is safe for the student athletes who are taking part in it. Because anything short of that, it seems to me, Jay, should render this a non-issue. That we shouldn't even be talking about doing it, right?
Well, that's a different issue than what I'm talking about. I mean, with all due respect to the people involved here, I'm not particularly interested in what a coach has to say about safety or what a commissioner has to say about safety. I'm interested in what the infectious disease experts on these medical panels that they keep touting that they're getting advice from. And Heather's point is a good one. There can be reasonable medical disagreement about some of the effects of like myocarditis. Can we go forward? Geographical differences. But we need to know what those are in order to make informed judgments. And the NCAA and the member institutions, the conferences, they can have briefings on this where they have their medical panel there to answer questions and to educate the public, most especially their athletes, coaches, and the like, so that we're not just making declarative statements that we are comfortable that based on what we've been told in moving forward. That's simply not good enough. And when you do have Dr. Del Rio step out and say, we're on the Titanic and we're arguing over what time the band plays, we know how that one came out. And that's a pretty big statement. And Dr. Del Rio is on that panel. We need to hear more of that and the data behind it. And listen, Mark Emmert, all due respect to the Office of the Presidency, but we hear a lot of declarative statements about, you know, he talked about authoritarian government yesterday when the czar was brought up, as if some of us are asking for Peter the Great to be in charge of football, and which is an absurd statement on his part. But he can't step up and say, our medical advisors are advising against football. I cannot tell from this office, the conference is not to play, but I can say it's a bad idea and have influence over it. And if he's being told that and not sharing that with the public and not sharing that with the players, then I think that's another profound failure in leadership.
That's right. He cannot tell them they can't play, but he certainly can publicly state, I think it's a terrible idea. It is not safe. The opinions of the people who are advising us here in Indianapolis are telling us it's not safe. I'm not telling him he should say that if it's not true, but that's, he certainly is well within his rights to say that if he wants to. Heather, quickly to finish this topic here, now what? I mean, where are we with all of this? You got problems at Syracuse and Florida State and other places, but they continue to push forward. What happens next?
Well, David Hale, one of our reporters for ESPN.com, spoke with Miami's president, and he said that the ACC presidents are nearly unanimous in their desire to continue to push forward today. I think the next thing, Greeny, is how does the cancellation of the fall championships impact everything? Does that have a domino effect? That's what we need to watch moving forward.
All right, we'll leave it there for the moment. Jay Billis, always a pleasure, my man. Thank you for chiming in. We'll see you soon, and we'll take a short break here. We'll come back. We'll go back to the NFL. Dak Prescott spoke this week for the first time in a long time. He said the right things, but will he be a Cowboy long term? The answer to that question may very well be no. We'll find out why right after this. We are back on Get Up, and let's run the bases through some of your baseball action from yesterday. And we start with Yu Darvish. He continued his dominance this season, took a no-hitter into the seventh, 11 strikeouts, Cubs 4-2 over the Brewers. Cubs now 13-3, best record in Major League Baseball. Elsewhere, the Tampa Bay Rays dominated the Red Sox. Let's see them. Show me the Rays. There they are. They beat the Red Sox 17-8 to complete a four-game sweep. During the series, the Rays scored 42 runs, most in franchise history for a four-game series. Rays have won six straight overall. They're now one game behind the Yankees in the AL East. Meanwhile, Mookie Betts had a game to remember. Dodgers dismantled the Padres 11-2. Betts 4-for-4, three homers, five RBIs. Now has six career three-homer games, which is tied for the most in baseball history with Johnny Mize and Sammy Sosa. Back to the NFL. For the first time since signing his franchise tag, Dak Prescott spoke publicly on Wednesday, addressing he and the team's inability to reach a long-term deal, and he certainly sounded at peace with it.
I'm excited as hell to be a Dallas Cowboy. I've been a fan of this organization and been a fan of this program for years. No frustration as far as that. Once again, I believe something will get done, and with my hopes, I believe I'll be a Dallas Cowboy for the rest of my career. So
Dak Prescott, as he always does, said exactly what you would want him to say publicly. But the real question, Dominique, Rob Ninkovich, Kimberly Martin with me here, and Nick, again, anyone who watches this show knows what a fan you are of Dak. Do you believe him when he says he's just absolutely fine with the way everything has played out?
Absolutely not. And I understand why he would not be telling the truth in this moment. I think that it does not serve him or the Cowboys for him to be honest right now. And I don't think that, frankly, we're the public, we're media, we're fans. We do not deserve the truth from him if he doesn't want to give it to us. So I don't see the reason why he should do that now. And I think all of us recognize that there are certain situations where honesty is not the best policy, where it's better off not to tell the truth in that moment. It reminds me, one of my nephews was applying to college and sent me his essay that had to be turned in a couple hours from the time when he sent it to me. It was trash. You know what I told him? All right, it's pretty good. Good luck to you. It was too late. It was nothing I could do about it. It served no one well at that point for me to be honest with him. But it was garbage, and he didn't get into the school that he wanted to go to.
Oh, I was going to ask you that question. Could you not have helped him rewrite it in the waning hours?
It was 2 hours.
What's
it
that?
Went to it.
You
should have
called me. You should have called me.
Should have called Kimberly.
No, it was nothing anyone could do at that moment. It was too late, Kimberly.
This young man, his entire life, the entire course of his life may have been influenced by that. Okay, all kidding
aside. He should have hit me up a week ago.
That's a terrible, absolutely terrible analogy to make here, but I appreciate your bringing it to the conversation. Kimberly, let me come to you. As you look at this thing from and assess where they are and what Jerry said the other day and what Dak said, what do you expect to happen?
It would not surprise me at all if in a year or two, Dak is wearing another jersey and he's standing behind the lectern, behind the podium, saying, giving us a sneak peek into what he really felt during the Cowboys years. Like Dominique was saying, he's not going to tell us what he really thinks, but I would think Dak would have to be a little bit frustrated given the fact that he wanted big money. He wanted a long-term extension. He wanted to get paid, and what we saw instead were his teammates getting paid, and we see guys around the league getting money, and your owner is talking about financial instability and uncertainty due to COVID.
Do you expect that too, Dominique? Quickly, as the president of his fan club, do you expect him to be in a different jersey, let's call it, by at least 2 years from now?
I absolutely do. There's no precedent for someone franchising a quarterback of this caliber and the quarterback sticking around.
And then, Rob Ninkovich, short term, as far as this season is concerned, If everyone has an inkling that the quarterback, who's supposed to be the leader of the team, has an issue with the organization, does that impact the locker room? Does it impact the team?
No, I don't think it impacts the team at all. Honestly, there's a kind of an unwritten rule in the NFL. Don't count other people's money. And everyone's focused on trying to go out there and put their best performance on the field so they can get a new contract. And I don't think that it's going to affect the Cowboys at all. I think that they're going to go out there. I think Dak is going to be motivated, and I think that Dak is going to play for another team next year. That's what I think.
Next year, I mean, look, the bottom line of it is, over the next three seasons, he's going to make more money than any other player in the NFL. He has every reason to be frustrated with the way this has been handled, Nick, but he's still making $31 million this year, and he stands to make more than that next season, almost no matter how this thing plays out. So he's going to wind up winning in this, even if he win the war in this thing, even if he loses a battle or two along the way.
Yeah, I absolutely think that he has all the leverage in the situation. He's going to play well this season. I disagree with Rob a little bit. It's because I know that that rule exists, but also we all see the way that the best players are treated, and that impacts the kind of feeling around the locker room and the culture around the locker room. If you see those guys who are the very best on your team and do everything right get treated in a way that you don't think is good, I don't think that helps for the culture of the locker room. And lastly, Greeny, I got my man into Maryland. I made some calls, did what I had to do, signed some checks. He got into a great school, the finest school in the country. So, Greeny, I'll have you know, I did my part.
Okay, fair enough. I'm glad you saved it there, because that was leaving us all a little bit uncomfortable. All right, well played. Let me leave it there for just a moment. Let me tell everybody that after this weekend is concerned, my entire world changes, and I hope at least 2 hours a day yours does too. I'm coming back to the radio Monday, starting noon Eastern time, coast to coast on ESPN Radio, and I will be followed every day by Max Kellerman. I'll be on TV in the morning and then on radio, then he'll be on TV in the morning and then on the radio. So we're with you from noon to four every single day, and then right after us is the spectacular new team of Shanae and Mike Golic Jr., who are fabulous with all the energy in the world. All of the shows will be simulcast on ESPN Radio and ESPN News. Meanwhile, this Monday will mark 12 weeks since George Floyd was killed by a Minneapolis police officer, and those weeks have brought fundamental change across the nation. Black Lives Matter, prior to Floyd's death, for many Americans was just a slogan. Today, it is a movement pushing for a sober, honest examination of how people of color are treated in this country. Athletes across many sports have emerged as leaders in protesting and keeping the movement in the spotlight. The question is, how has that involvement been received by sports fans in the United States? Ryan Smith has the answer.
George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, Ahmaud Arbery, their deaths and the deaths and treatment of other black people at the hands of police officers have sparked months of protests on issues of racism, police brutality, and social injustice. In few places has the outcry for change been louder, both in words and actions, than in the world of sports.
Why am I here at 16 still demanding change?
Together we stand.
We will be a voice for the voiceless.
Whether it's LeBron James addressing issues of voter suppression, scores of athletes kneeling during the national anthem, or athletes taking to the streets in protest, some of sports' biggest names are speaking out like never before.
We want change. We want justice.
The time is always right to do what's right.
And according to the fan poll, sports fans are watching and supporting their efforts. Among the fan poll respondents, 8 in 10 say they have followed protests and demonstrations on racial injustice and police misconduct. 71% support teams and athletes speaking out on issues of social injustice and racial inequality. And 63% believe athletes can make a difference when addressing social justice issues. But the fan poll respondents are divided on how and where those views should be expressed, with stark differences along racial lines. 51% said athletes should express their social and political views during sporting events, a sentiment echoed by over three-fourths of black fans, 61% of Hispanic fans, but less than half of white fans. 49% think athletes should only express these views on their own time, including 54% of whites, more than double the percentage of black respondents. These fans are mixed when it comes to kneeling during the national anthem. 56% deem it appropriate, 44% do not. Support for the man often credited with starting that form of expression, Colin Kaepernick, is also divided. While feelings towards Kaepernick appear to be changing, 37% of fans say their feelings have become more positive toward the quarterback in recent months, 40% remain the same, and only 19% have become less positive. 54% of all fans feel the NFL owes Kaepernick an apology for how he has been treated over the last several seasons, while 36% do not.
Ryan Smith, here's Dominique back with us. A lot there to react to, Dominique. What jumped out to you as you heard some of the results of the polling that we did?
Well, first of all, I think it's hugely interesting that we're focusing on that. I think that it's important to point out that there are quite a few players who are doing more than just demonstrating. And you can go to Natasha Cloud and Maya Moore from the WNBA who have retired, but stopped playing in order to focus on those efforts. But when it... as it pertains to the on-field demonstrations, I think those are as important as ever. As we move into a world where everyone kind of creates their own media bubbles, where you can get an echo chamber of the things that you believe, there are so few places where you can hear opinions and hear interests and thoughts from people who disagree with you. And sports is one of those places that brings us all together. So I think it means that it's the perfect opportunity to demonstrate. It's perfect opportunity to open people's eyes and force them to look at things that make them uncomfortable. And social change comes from being uncomfortable. Any type of major change comes from being uncomfortable. And I think that, I know that any progress that we can say that we've had in the history of this country when it pertains to civil rights and social justice, athletes are there and athletes are at the forefront. And it is true now, just as it was true back in the days of Paul Robeson.
Yeah, I mean, the reality of it is saying you don't want to see this stuff happening during sporting events is the same as saying, because it's much too hard for me to ignore it if you're going to do that. And that's what I would really prefer to do. Anyway, fascinating results, and you can see much more about them on ESPN.com. As we continue, the Seahawks made a personnel move for the most 2020 reason ever. We'll tell you what it was and why teams around sports need to address it immediately. That's on the way. You're watching Get Up on ESPN.